Welcome to Native America Calling. From Studio 869 in Isleta Pueblo, I'm Tara Gatewood. Two recent court decisions cleared the way for building a more than 1,000-mile oil pipeline across northern Minnesota. Enbridge, the company behind the Line 3 pipeline project, says it could have the project completed within 9 months. Tribes and opposition groups continue to push back against the project and are turning up at construction sites. Coming up, we'll get an update on the issue. We go live right after National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Megan Kamrick, in for Antonia Gonzalez. In Washington, a bill banning the use of Native American names, symbols, or images as mascots in public schools will now go before the full State House of Representatives after passing out of committee. KGMI reports the bill was introduced by Representative Deborah LeCanif, the only Native American member of the state legislature. She told the Seattle Times she was inspired to introduce the legislation after the Washington, D.C. NFL team abandoned its name last July. Under pressure from protesters and investors. Washington has been slow to change because its local school districts have the power to determine their own mascots and team names. LeCanif said in a hearing on the bill that while mascot defenders have said some of the symbols are meant to honor Native Americans, they are still stereotypes.
We hear language, sports language, being called out. Kill the chieftains, kill the braves. We do not feel honored in any way.
The ban would not apply to schools on tribal lands or schools with enrollment boundaries that include tribal land or schools in counties with a reservation or tribal trust land, but the Seattle Times reports those schools would have to seek approval of the residing tribe. There are 29 federally recognized tribes in Washington. A member of the Tribal Council of the Fort Yuma Kachan Indian Tribe in southern Arizona died in early February after contracting COVID-19. Emma Gibson from Arizona Public Media reports she had also served as the chief judge of the San Manuel Band of Mission Indians Tribal Court.
Claudette C. White died almost a month after being sworn into the council. Throughout her life, White also served on the Kachan and San Manuel Tribal Courts. Kachan President Jordan D. Joaquin says Judge White applied restorative justice by implementing tribal customs and traditions while in court, stepping away from standard punishments. She also served as a trial and appellate judge in a variety of tribal courts in Arizona. Judge White was known for her expertise in missing and murdered Indigenous women and girls. And the San Manuel tribal government says she helped tribal youth educate communities and support those impacted by human trafficking. For National Native News, I'm Emma Gibson.
A new project will digitize thousands of oral histories of Native Americans in archives and universities. The Doris Duke Charitable Foundation announced it's granting $1.6 million to the Association of Tribal Archives, Libraries, and Museums, and 7 universities for the Native Oral History Revitalization Project. Tucson.com reports the interviews were collected in the 1960s and 70s and span 150 cultures. Subjects were asked to reflect on the experience of living on reservations and attending boarding schools. They were also asked about their knowledge of Native traditions. Only about a quarter of the archive has been digitized so far. The foundation said the funds will also allow for expansion of the collections to include contemporary voices and develop related curriculum resources for students and visitors. And in California, a bill introduced by the first Native American elected to the state legislature would replace a toppled statue of Father Junipero Serra with a tribute to Sacramento regional tribes. Writing in calmatters.org, Assemblyman James C. Ramos notes he does not condone the vandalism last year that took down the Serra statue in Capitol Park, but he writes that it is, quote, long past time for a more accurate and complete telling of the mission period's impact on California Native Americans and Serra. His bill has sponsorship and support of 6 tribes in the Sacramento area. It would repeal a statutory requirement that a monument to Serra be maintained on the Capitol grounds. It would also require that a new Capitol annex include a mural dedicated to the state's indigenous people in a hearing room. The California Globe reports the bill has garnered co-signers, giving it a renewed push to pass by the summer. For National Native News, I'm Megan Kamrick.
National Native News is produced by Kawanak Broadcast Corporation with funding by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
Support by the American Indian College Fund, providing scholarships to Native students of every age for over 30 years. Applications for the upcoming school year accepted through May 31st at collegefund.org. Support for law and justice-related programming provided by Hobbs, Strauss, Dean & Walker, LLP, a national law firm dedicated to promoting and defending tribal rights for more than 30 years. More information available at HobbsStrauss.com.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.
This is Native America Calling. I'm Tara Gatewood, joining you live from my homeland, Sheshewetui, via Skype. A federal appeals court judge denied a motion to stop construction of the Line 3 pipeline replacement project. It's the second recent court decision in favor of the proposed 1,000-mile crude oil pipeline. The project starts in Alberta, Canada. Its planned path goes through northern Minnesota between the Red Lake and White Earth reservations and across from the Fond du Lac, across the Fond du Lac reservation. The project replaces an existing aging pipeline. Construction has already started, but opposition groups are taking a stand at construction sites. This is the latest development in the Line 3 pipeline conflict in Minnesota. It was originally proposed by Enbridge in 2014, and some of the first resistant camps went up in 2017. We'll get an update on the project and what happened in the legal fights. And we'll also hear about any additional steps opponents have in store. You're welcome to join us, too. We look forward to hearing your thoughts. What do you think about the Line 3 pipeline project? Give us a call, 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. And today we are going to start off in Red Lake, Minnesota. We have Joe Plummer with us. He is a member of the Legal Council for the Red Lake Nation, and he is also a member of the Leech Lake Band of Ojibwe. Our pleasure to have him here with us. Joe, welcome to Native America Calling.
Thank you, Tara.
And Joe, so take us through a little bit of what has happened most recently, especially in the courts and where things currently stand. Go ahead.
Okay. Well, you know, as you indicated, there were two recent decisions, you know, that were against us, but those were not the substantive appeals. Those were instead each emergency petitions, one to the Intermediate Court of Appeals here in Minnesota, and a second one in the U.S. District Court for the D.C. District. And each of those, what we had attempted to do is to stop the construction during dependency of the appeals. In Minnesota, we're challenging the local public utilities commission's decisions to grant a certificate of need and a route permit, as well as the adequacy of the environmental impact statement. Those substantive issues are still pending. We just sought to also have the construction stopped during dependency of the appeals. And the Intermediate Court of Appeals here in Minnesota denied our request to stop construction, but those substantive appeals still are in process. On the D.C. District Court case, we sought a preliminary injunction because of the decision of the Army Corps of Engineers. We believed that the Army Corps of Engineers didn't do the independent environmental review that they're mandated to do under NEPA, but they instead accepted the half-baked environmental analysis that the Minnesota Public Utilities Commission found adequate, and we believed that the Army Corps' decision to shortcut the environmental review in their Clean Water Act and harbors permits was improper. Again, you know, the U.S. District Court over in D.C., declined to award a preliminary injunction seeking the same thing, you know, that we wanted through Minnesota to stop the construction during the pendency of the appeals. The appeals of the substantive issues involving the Army Corps, continuing process. So those substantive appeals are still working their way through the system.
Okay. Well, thank you for that. Mm-hmm. And so what is a temperature like, Joe, in terms of just hearing these decisions, knowing that there are people there taking a stance? What would you say is the sentiment, is the temperature, the way people are thinking, how they're feeling about these times?
Well, I thought you were talking about our temperatures because we just had a recent very cold spell, and it was 35 below zero here this morning. And so just as a practical matter, all of these pipeliners come from Mississippi and Arkansas and Texas and Oklahoma, so I bet they're having a heck of a time out there.
Yeah, it's real cold. You all know it well. But in how people are feeling and their reactions to this, tell me more, Joe.
Well, I can tell you people up at the Red Lake Nation are uniformly opposed, you know, to the Enbridge's plans here, you know, to install a new pipeline. You know, and I need to say this, you know, we're subjected to a vast misinformation campaign through the media, radio, TV, newspapers, constantly over the past 3 years by Enbridge, talking as if Line 3 is their only pipeline. That's what the public believes. But in reality, they have six pipelines that make up the Enbridge main line, and that goes right through our territories. Those six pipelines transport 2.8 million barrels per day of oil. There's two refineries in Minnesota. When they're operating at 100% capacity, they use 400,000 barrels. So we have an excess of 2.4 million barrels that passes through our territory every day. We don't have a need for all this excess tar sands crude from Alberta. We have plenty of capacity right now. Okay.
All right, Joe, thank you. Also here, too, is Frank Bebo, who joins us today out of Minnesota. He is a tribal attorney. He's also with Honor the Earth and enrolled in the Minnesota Chippewa at White Earth. Our pleasure to have him here. Thank you for joining us, Frank.
Well, thank you.
And Frank, Joe gave us an update of where things currently stand, but is there anything you would like to share about current actions in the court?
I think Joe explained things very well about where things are in the court right now. Technically, you know, we have oral arguments for the case in Minnesota for the substantive part of the argument that the stay was requested for. That's in March 23rd, so that's out there a little bit. And we still have an appeal against the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency with their Clean Water Act permitting also. So there are a couple of other court actions going on, but the two that you mentioned with the stay and then the preliminary injunction were the two that we were hoping would bring a prompt stop to the construction.
And so, Frank, in creating more understanding of how much this will affect tribal nations, what more would you like to add of the impact this all is having on the tribe and could possibly continue to have if things roll further?
Well, the first thing I would say is right now, when I look at the new Biden administration and the executive orders that they've made about climate change and other things and looking at KXL, it doesn't matter if you're looking at KXL or if you're looking at DAPL or Line 3, they're all the same kind of a snake. They're all running tar sands oil from Canada one way or another, trying to get it down to the Gulf of Mexico. So when the president's announcement for KXL came out, that's all well and good. But in reality, you're just only addressing one of the three identical exact pollutants in terms of the source being the tar sands from Canada, and then the lack of need on any one of the routes that you look at, like Joe was talking about, and then you get down to the Gulf of Mexico and all that stuff is just going to go out to other countries. When these things happen, two things are going to happen. One is we're going to end up with more of the pollution in the air and the greenhouse gases and so forth from the extreme extraction methods that they have to employ to even get the tar sands out of the ground and then, you know, viscous enough to even push through a pipe. But then you also have, you know, the other effects of it being some of the dirtiest oil to being burned. And so in terms of climate change, these are our biggest global threats right here, and they're all coming through Indian country one way or another, and they're going to impact our waters. And that's our biggest concern, is the fallout of these types of pollution and what they're going to do to our waters. If there's another pipe break like there was in Cohasset or in Kalamazoo or in the Prairie River here in Grand Rapids, if there's any of those, well, you know, then we got the next problem. And the part that I don't like about all of this is, like Joe was talking about, the mainline corridor. There's six pipelines that parallel Highway 2 for over 100, maybe 150 miles here in Minnesota. This new route that they want to put in what they're calling a replacement pipeline, it's not a replacement. It's putting in a brand new pipeline that'll carry twice as much oil as even being put through Line 3 right now. And it's going through a new corridor, a new green field that hasn't ever had a pipeline in it. And so why are we even going to contaminate a new fresh area when we already have this other area that has six pipelines going through it, and they're not using them in completely the best way they can? But my understanding, and this is a matter that we filed on behalf of Honor the Earth, it looks like since 2014, when Enbridge first applied for Line 3 replacement and said that they had need for X amount of barrels per day, that through efficiencies and other kinds of upgrades in the mainline system, they have accomplished the same amount of barrels per day with the existing pipelines. So then the question becomes, is this more need, a different need, or is it the same need, and they just don't want to say so because they want to pump even more tar sands through our territory? And I think they've already met their goal. I think they're in, you know, a business, a industry that's in decline. There's a lot less people in the oil field, and I think there's going to be a lot more in solar and wind and other places. And, you know, I think it's time to shut all three of these pipelines down simultaneously. And that's what I'd like to see the Biden administration do. It'd be a lot easier than making us wonder if he's going to just do one pipe, two pipe, three. Let's just act uniformly for all three bad pipelines.
All right, thank you for that. We got to take a break here, but I know you're thinking something. We're talking Line 3 today. Go ahead and give us a ring. 1-800-996-2848 is the number. We look forward to your calls, your questions too. And coming up after the break, we are also going to hear from a representative from Enbridge and hear their thoughts on all this. But you can join us too. How does all of this affect you? Does it parallel anything your tribe has faced, your community? Give us a ring. 1-800-996-2848 is the number. It's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. People with disabilities already face additional barriers compared with the rest of the population. Now, advocates and health officials say the pandemic poses additional daily hardships, including reduced access to health care and transportation. We'll hear more about it on the next Native America Calling.
Support by Roswell Park, who know tribal communities face persistent challenges in health equity, such as cancer and higher death rates. The Center for Indigenous Cancer Research at Roswell Park Comprehensive Cancer Center is dedicated to advancing cancer research that will lead to translatable science, medicine, and cancer care for Indigenous populations worldwide. Are you at high risk for cancer? A no-charge online assessment tool is available at roswellpark.org/assessme.
You're listening to Native America Calling. I'm Tara Gatewood from Isleta Pueblo, and we are talking about the Line 3 in northern Minnesota. And we hope you will join us in this conversation. Enbridge says construction is set to be done in about 9 months. Is this a pipeline you're concerned about? Do you see it as a benefit? Join our conversation by calling 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. On the line with us today, out of Minnesota, is Frank Bebo, who is a tribal attorney. Also here, too, from Red Lake, Minnesota, is Joe Plummer, and he is a member of the legal counsel for the Red Lake Nation. Our pleasure to have both of them here. And also on the line, too, joining us from Duluth, Minnesota, is Paul Eberth. He is the director of U.S. Tribal Engagement for Enbridge. It's our pleasure to have him here. Paul, thank you for joining us for another Native America Calling. Welcome.
Yeah, thanks for having me on, Tara.
And so, Paul, just want to get any thoughts. You heard both from Frank and Joe and some of their concerns. Anything you'd like to add?
Yeah, thanks. You know, let me share just a little bit about, you know, how we see the need for replacement. And then I know Frank brought up energy transition, and just share a little bit about what the company's doing with respect to energy transition and how that's been going over the last several decades for Enbridge. But first off, on the need, you know, line three, replacing it will be safer. It'll be more efficient for transportation, and it'll better protect resources in Minnesota and for the tribes. And that's what the finding has been through the more than 6 years review this pipeline's been under. You mentioned, Tara, that we applied in 2014. A little background on line three. So line three was built in the 1960s. It is about an 1,100-mile pipeline. But it's already been replaced in Canada and Wisconsin. And so the way it operates today, oil flows through the new pipe in both Canada and Wisconsin, and then it flows through the old pipe in Minnesota. Today, it runs at about half its capacity, and it's running at about half its capacity because there's corrosion occurring on the pipeline in a way that essentially can't be stopped because of how the coating has desponded from the pipe. The original Line 3 also runs across 43 miles of the Leech Lake Reservation and about 13 miles of the Fond du Lac Reservation. Both tribes we've you know, worked closely with over the years and have found solutions for replacing Line 3 with, both very different solutions. But we've gotten to a point where neither of those two tribes, arguably the most impacted since it has Line 3 on their reservation, neither are opposing the project today. And in fact, both have written in support recently. There is still a need for crude oil. We're using it today. In fact, in the U.S., about 15 to 18 million barrels of crude oil is used today. And Joe mentioned our mainline system, which includes more than Line 3 coming through Minnesota, moves about 2.8 million barrels a day. And Joe's also right that, the refineries in Minnesota only take around 400,000 barrels a day. But the reality of how our system operates is it makes deliveries in many locations. It is a interstate transportation system, so it makes deliveries to the Minnesota refineries in Minnesota. It made a delivery in Wisconsin. It continues on, makes deliveries in Michigan and Illinois and Ohio and Oklahoma and throughout. And we do have about, we have seven pipelines actually coming into Minnesota, one from North Dakota and six coming in from Canada that come to Clearbrook. And absent the one that moves diluent back north, and there's five that continue out of Clearbrook down to Wisconsin, and then four that leave from there. So just by design of our system, you can see how oil comes off slowly at different points when it makes deliveries to refineries. And in fact, the Minnesota refinery testified in the process here in Minnesota to the need to have Line 3 replaced. Just switch to energy transition. I mean, crude oil is still being used in the U.S. and still needed, and it will be needed for decades. That doesn't mean we're not transitioning to lower carbons of energy. In fact, Enbridge started in 1949 with one oil pipeline, but it's been participating in this transition to lower carbon for decades. In fact, in the 90s, we purchased a natural gas business and have grown it. We built our first wind farm in 2002, so almost 20 years ago now. In fact, I got the opportunity to be the project manager for one of our wind farms that was built in Colorado in 2010 and 11. 2009, we built our first solar farm. We have now offshore wind. And in 2018, we built our first hydrogen facility where we take excess power and generate hydrogen. And in fact, just this last year, we were permitted to blend hydrogen into our natural gas stream to lower the content there. So the company's been participating in this energy transition for decades. But pipelines are still overland the safest and most efficient way to move crude oil while it's being used.
And with that said, Paul, you know, we also mentioned two different changes we've seen with the new administration also putting a halt on the Keystone XL. Any thoughts on how this administration is viewing, you know, what is going on in terms of this kind of development? Do you think that some of this may ever spill over into putting a halt into Line 3?
Line 3 is also the subject of what's called a consent decree. So with the EPA, back actually under the Obama administration when Biden was vice president, Enbridge signed a consent decree that was designed to require the company to make several changes to its business in order to improve the safety of our pipelines. And one of those requirements in that agreement with the EPA, again, under the Obama administration, was to replace Line 3. So that is, in fact, what we're doing. You know, that agreement was made, you know, prior to Trump. And now with Biden being back in, I don't know that anything changes. You know, replacing the pipeline still improves safety and efficiency of transportation. Line 3 also wasn't a recipient of any executive orders under the Trump administration approving the project. We went through the normal and rigorous permitting process. In fact, the Army Corps process included the consultation with, I think it was at least 30 tribes, going back to 2015. And through that federal review, the Fond du Lac Band managed a cultural resources survey on the entire pipeline project, which helped inform the Army Corps' review and ultimate determination to issue the pipeline permit. And today, that, you know, the pipeline is permitted by the state, it's permitted by the federal government, and absolutely can't miss the fact that the pipeline is also permitted by one tribe that has 401 water quality authority, and that is the Fond du Lac Band. You know, as a sovereign nation, the state of Minnesota does not have the authority to issue the water permit when doing work on the reservation. That's the tribe's authority. They have treatment of state authority from the EPA, and they've reviewed and issued the permits for the project as well.
And Paul, something that also comes into question is with this new, or as you're calling it, a replacement, that there will be larger pipes put in. Is that a true statement? And any thoughts about that?
It is, Tara. It is a true statement. So the existing Line 3 is a 34-inch diameter pipeline, and the replacement will be a 36-inch diameter pipeline. So it's pretty similar in size, but it is true that it's larger. You know, the other thing that might go unnoticed, part of our negotiation with Fond du Lac was to make other improvements to our operations on their reservation, where we agreed to then replace what's called our Line 4 pipeline for 10 miles on its on the reservation. And in that case, we're actually replacing a 48-inch diameter pipe with a 36-inch diameter pipe, so actually installing a pipe that's quite a bit smaller for that section of Line 4 on the Fond du Lac Reservation. So while, yes, the pipe diameter is slightly bigger for Line 3 replacement, it's not significantly bigger.
And tell us more about the decision to go through a new corridor, I understand, and why not just replace the pipe where it's at and go from there?
Okay. In the early stages of the project, you mentioned 2014, you know, the concept was brought public. Actually, before that, we had engaged with the Leech Lake Band and Fond du Lac. You know, the pipeline goes across both the reservations. The Leech Lake Band was very clear that in saying that if you're to rebuild Line 3, we want you to rebuild Line 3, not through our reservation. So in the early stages of this project, we looked at a replacement route to go around the 43 miles of their reservation. So the route that we selected, about half of that new route or about a third of that new route follows other crude oil pipelines. So it's not pristine and, you know, without pipeline impacts. Our route for Line 3 deviates from the Enbridge pipelines in Clearbrook and heads south to a town near to a point near Park Rapids following the Koch pipelines. And then from there, it turns east and follows electric transmission line for the east-west portion until it gets back to the Enbridge pipelines near Gowan, Minnesota. So there is part of it that doesn't have pipelines, and there's part of it that that does have pipelines.
Clearing that up. Mm-hmm. Thank you for that. Paul Eberth with us today. He is the director of U.S. Tribal Engagement for Enbridge. If you'd like to talk to anybody on the line, go ahead and give us a ring, 1-800-996-2848. Let's go ahead and take a call. We're going to say hi to Shell, who's in Fort Hall, Idaho, tuned in on KISU. Thanks for giving us a ring, Shell. Welcome to the conversation. Go ahead. Your thoughts.
You say your alma mater, Tara. Good morning, Tara.
Good day to you.
Oil is a contributor to climate change, and all the fires we experienced last fall, you know, a lot of places were devastated. The ancient redwood forests and endangered species are probably gone extinct now. And that is a result of climate change and all this chaos with Mother Nature going on now is kind of like as a result of that. And you know, like, you know, oil is temporary, you know. It's not, you know, like, it only benefits the big corporations and other countries, other world powers.
Well, Shell, thank you for weighing in your thoughts there in Fort Hall, Idaho. And, you know, where this will all ultimately go, maybe that's where you have some thoughts. Give us a ring, 1-800-996-2848. Thanks for giving us a ring, Shell. Also here, too, out of Carlton, Minnesota, is Nick Kedrowski, and he is a managing partner and senior instructor of Five Skies Training. He is a member of the Oneida Nation of Wisconsin. Our pleasure to have him here with us. Nick, welcome to Native America Calling.
Hi, thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
And Nick, just want to get your thoughts, where you stand on all of this and your ties to anything that's being discussed today. Go ahead.
Okay. Well, as an instructor, obviously I'm not an expert on pipelines or anything of that nature. Our ties or our link to Enbridge came about when we were approached three or four years ago now to provide a training to improve their interactions in tribal communities. So my wife and I were approached, and we met with some of their executive staff and just did a day-long seminar and kind of team-building activities, and we didn't think too much about that. We appreciated that opportunity and hoped that we could make some improvements to make things better for the tribal communities they were impacting, and we kind of went about our business again. And then just a couple of years ago, they approached us again. And asked us if we could replicate a programming that we did with the Minneapolis Building Trades Council and 10 of the union trades that were in that area where we did a kind of a work readiness training. But they wanted us to do that program up here with the tribes and communities that are impacted by their Line 3 replacement project. So that was significantly different, and we didn't really know anything about Enbridge, you know, other than their, you know, for us it was big oil. So we were kind of hesitant, and we told them we needed to know more. I love to research. I like digging into information. I like statistics. So we started doing our research. We did our digging. We met with First Nations representatives and leadership in Canada. We actually went to the Line 3 project as it was going on in Canada as well to actually see what they were doing. When we verified that the things that they were saying and their intentions were well meaning and being followed through, we did agree to do the training. So what we do for them now is in the tribal communities that are impacted, we try to provide what we call an empowerment training, which essentially is designed to help Native Americans overcome a lot of the barriers that are preventing us from having successes in career pathways moving forward, whether it's pipeline-related, construction, your own business, if you want to, you know, work at a bank, it doesn't matter. Our programming is designed to try to improve those outcomes. So we are
and
able
so,
to.
I'm curious about that, Nick. And by what means of empowering the community, and how is all that directly tied to concerns that tribes are having about potential environmental risk and also potential risk to waters?
good question. So what we do is we teach critical core skills, creativity, you know, critical thinking, research, as well as some financial literacy, you know, basic financial literacy. We're not teaching anyone to, you know, become accountants or anything, but just generally how to budget and plan your money, how to establish goals, also how to plan from kind of a native perspective. We're not teaching somebody how to be a good Oneida or a good Ho-Chunk or a good Ojibwe, just general kind of spiritual principles that apply. And we also cover teachings of the medicine wheel, which is a program that my sister-in-law, Charity Thunder, had developed for her master's program and taught us. And we adapted a white bison program. My wife is a trained facilitator for the Mending Broken Hearts. But we adapted it to be more of a short format that's a little more hard-hitting that we incorporate as well. Because my work as a tarot director taught me that there are still issues that tribal members have that are preventing us from being successful when we venture off the reservation. We tend to have conflicts and issues that ultimately wind up leading us to come back. And we try to provide some tools to help deal with those situations to improve the outcomes.
Sure. You know, there are a lot of challenges, you know, in all of this too. Hang tight. We got to go to break here. But again, phone lines are open. Give us a ring. 1-800-996-2848 is the number. Go ahead and dial in and share your thoughts on all this, what you're hearing today, what you know about development in your own tribal community. 1-800-996-2848 is the number. Phone lines are open.
If you're a Native American entrepreneur looking to expand or start up a business, you should know about the Indian Loan Guarantee and Insurance Program, a federal program encouraging private lenders to make the business loan you need. The Indian Loan Guarantee and Insurance Program supports your lender so your lender can support you. Information available by emailing dci@bia.gov. That's dci@bia.gov. The Office of Indian Energy and Economic Development supports this program.
Thank you for tuning in to Native America Calling. I'm Tara Gatewood, and we are focused on Line 3 Pipeline today. There's still time to join our conversation. Have you been following the issue? What are your thoughts on the proposed pipeline? Give us a call, 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. And we're going to go ahead and go to our phone lines. They are lighting up. We want to know what you're thinking today. Let's go ahead and say hello to Jason, who is in the Lakutere Ojibwe community in Wisconsin. Jason, thank you for giving us a ring. You're on air.
Thank you, Tara. Yeah, I just wanted to comment that we did have negotiations over a lease agreement with Enbridge over a pipeline that cuts across the southern border of our reservation. And we really had to do our due diligence to understand what it meant for our community and the need that we also had for reliable and dependable fuels. A few years prior, we had a propane shortage, and the cost of propane was skyrocketing, and our elders and community members could not afford that kind of expense, unexpected expense. So we did do our due diligence, reached out to other tribes that worked with Enbridge, and we came to terms for a 25-year lease. We also requested that we do independent inspections, that we are able to attend any integrity digs, and that we're kept involved, and they also provide training for emergency management in our community, not just the reservation, but the local communities that also would respond to any emergency. But so far, I would say that we have had a very good relationship. They're very respectful, and they come in asking for us to teach instead of telling us how things are going to be done. And it's a lot different than what we've seen with
other corporations or say the railroad that doesn't even reply to us when we want to sit down and discuss issues.
All right, Jason, thank you for giving us a ring there in Wisconsin. We now go to Johnny Bear, who is in Rapid City, tuned in on KILI. Thank you for giving us a ring, Johnny Bear. You're on air. All right, let's go ahead and go to another caller. We have Jeff in Superior, Wisconsin, tuned in on WOJB. Jeff, thanks for giving us a ring. You're on air.
Hi, good afternoon. I'm concerned about a spill I heard years ago that occurred in Michigan. It was on an Enbridge pipeline. I was wondering if the guests could give us a status of that cleanup and what Enbridge possibly learned from that accident. And my other concern is regarding the replacement line, what safeguards are in place to prevent a spill like that happening, what occurred in Michigan? Thank you.
Okay. Hang tight, Jeff. Thanks for giving us a ring. On the line today is Paul Eberth, who is Director of U.S. Tribal Engagement for Enbridge. Also on the line, too, is Managing Partner and Senior Instructor of Five Skies Training, Nick Kedrowski. Also on the line, too, is Joe Plummer, a member of the Legal Council for the Red Lake Nation, and also Frank Bebo, who is a tribal attorney, also with Honor the Earth. Thank you all for being here. And Paul, anything for our caller, Jeff?
Yeah, so in 2010, Enbridge's pipeline line 6B did have a major rupture and oil spill that went into Talmadge Creek and the Kalamazoo River. It was a sad day for the company. It was a bad release. I'm going to be blunt with you. You know, that pipeline has since been replaced. It's a pipeline of similar construct as line 3. Which is one of the reasons why we're replacing the Line 3 pipeline. Since then, there's been a tremendous effort put into the cleanup of the Kalamazoo River. You know, I will say I've been canoeing now down the Kalamazoo River twice in the last couple years. I actually went smallmouth bass fishing on the river and did quite well and proud of the cleanup that's taken place. In fact, the cleanup on the Kalamazoo River led to some improvements too, like building some new community and public accesses to the river, a new park, taking out an old dam to restore the free flow of the river in an area. But it was a significant event for the company, and lots of changes have been made since. Our control center, in fact, was taken out of the office tower and built in a separate location so that those operating the pipeline can not be distracted by the day-to-day business and focus solely on safety. Replacing Line 3 is one of the outcomes of improving the safety of our operation since that incident.
Okay. And Paul, another concern that we also know is the cleanup of the pipe that won't be used anymore. What are the plans for it? Tell me more.
Yeah, the existing Line 3, the commitment we made through our permits was that as soon as the replacement is in service, we'll take the old one out of service, and that'll be done by cleaning the pipe out from the inside. And then we further made agreements both with Leech Lake and with the Fond du Lac Band to remove the old pipe from their reservations. So there'll be a pipeline removal work that'll take place in those locations after Line 3 replacement is done. And then the other aspect of the decommissioning and removal is we've agreed to do a landowner choice program with the state. So landowners, private landowners, have the option to either elect to have us remove the pipe or allow us to leave it in place afterwards once it's vacated of oil and cleaned out.
All right. Thank you for that. I got another caller. We're going to say hi to Denise, who's in Washburn, Wisconsin, tuned in on WOJB. Denise, thanks for giving us a ring. You're on air.
Yes, hello. I'm just concerned about the devastation that projects like this we continue to make on our earth. We're impacting our animals, our vegetation, our trees. When are we going to learn? When are we going to stop? these impacts of devastation can happen later, too, with the spills. We've just heard about the one. So any comments on that, please?
Okay, thank you for that. And I know another concern, too, is also possible contamination of water. I do want to turn to our attorneys and just kind of get their take. Of course, if you can please also share your thoughts about Denise's concerns. Frank, I'll start with you.
Thank you very much, Tara. I think Denise's concerns are the exact concerns that tribal beneficiaries and tribal treaty beneficiaries are concerned about, the environment and our continuous ability to have all of the animals and all of the resources living abundantly and not being in jeopardy or, you know, maybe being squeezed out by climate change and other things. You know, I'd like to address a couple of pieces that Paul said, if you don't mind. You know, the cleanup on the Kalamazoo River and so forth, it's not complete. It's not 100%, but they did a lot of cleanup, but it's not 100%. And my understanding is you can't get to 100% because the type of oil with the tar sands is that it sinks to the bottom. And so it makes it harder to find and clean up. And my understanding is that it's near $2 billion in costs for cleanup at this point. So what happens if Enbridge isn't a business in 10 years or 15 years and we have a spill? The things that I was most concerned about that was said about line three being safer, that's not exactly true. It's thought that, and it's been argued that, and that I don't know that it's even going to be a better protection for the environment. If you look at what line three has been doing for the last decade, there's been approximately 66 gallons, just gallons, of oil spilled on the Enbridge line three pipeline. And my understanding is that they happened all at pump stations. And so they weren't really spills, but that's over the last decade. And so the total amount spilled is 66 gallons, not even, you know, a couple of barrels really of oil. And so what that means is they are operating line three the way it is right now, as safe as it possibly can, because there's money flowing through it every single day. The problem is because of the spill that it had in Cohasset in 2002 here in Minnesota, and the prior spills plus things like the Kalamazoo, they have been operating that pipeline at half capacity. So when Paul says, yeah, one's a 34 and one's a 36-inch pipe, that's right, 34-inch at half capacity and 36 at full capacity. They're two different animals. The size of the pipe is what he was commenting on. Also, the consent decree from the Kalamazoo oil spill, it says that they must apply. They don't get to just have a new pipeline and tear up our place. And what happened here recently with the new pipeline at KXL, they've had spills along since the new pipeline came out. And when you have a new pipeline, it gets inspected every 5 years. And so those spills happened before they had an inspection. Right now, because they don't have a new pipeline, Enbridge is having to make an inspection every single year. So we know that they're looking at what's going on with that pipeline much better, and a new pipeline won't be inspected and may have the problem itself. You know, when we were in this battle about 3 years ago, before all the, I'll just say politics started getting into the money or money into the politics, the Public Utilities Commission was doing an environmental impact study, and the administrative law judge concluded that the best type of replacement was an in-trench replacement in line. Anything else was going to harm the treaty resources. And the PUC, the Public Utilities Commission, they didn't care about our treaty resources, and they went ahead and approved things for Enbridge. And so, you know, we're stuck between a rock and a hard place where we've made our best arguments, and the people who were actually making the decisions about an environmental impact statement recognize the dangers to our environment and our resources. But those on the Public Utilities Commission, they decided otherwise. And that's the problem we're facing, is the quasi-judicial process in Minnesota that's impacting our permanent rights for people who live in Canada and people who are going to get a product down at the Gulf of Mexico. And we're going to get what's left. And it's not the good parts.
All right. Thank you for that, Frank. We got another caller on the line. We have Pam in Fond du Lac on the Fond du Lac Reservation in Minnesota calling in. Pam, thank you for giving us a ring. You're on air.
Hey, thank you for having me. I just want to say that I was the tribal monitor that monitored the line from North Dakota to Superior. I was the only female that applied from my reservation, and nobody had any knowledge about the plants that were going through here and stuff. So I took that upon myself to learn what plants were here and what we used and gathered. And from what I see out here working with these gentlemen, they're all interested in what's out here and what we use and what's available to us, and want to help and protect and oversee. I can clearly see out here where this line 3, the old one, is exposed a great section to our reservation here, and it has to be removed. It's above the ground, and I just feel that has to come out. But yeah.
Okay, Pam, thanks for giving us a ring. And Joe, anything you'd like to comment on?
Yes, I would. Earlier when we first started this at the top of the hour, you know, I mentioned that 50% of this new Line 3 corridor is brand new greenfield with no existing pipelines. Enbridge has been after this corridor for a number of years, even before this Line 3 project. Before Line 3, Enbridge wanted to transport Bakken crude oil out of western North Dakota, straight across North Dakota, and then into Minnesota and through this exact same corridor. They didn't get it. At the time, and this was back in 2013 or 2014, I can't remember now, the administrative law judge and the Public Utilities Commission agreed with Enbridge that opening up this brand new corridor did not require an environmental impact statement. I mean, it was, you know, so a group of us, you know, all of our intervening parties appealed that to the Intermediate Court of Appeals here in Minnesota. And the Court of Appeals said, well, heck, that's a no-brainer. Of course you need to do an environmental impact statement when you're going to be going, you know, a 36-inch pipeline through a new greenfield corridor. And so when that decision came out from the Minnesota Court of Appeals, probably 2014, the next day, Enbridge withdrew their permits for the Certificate of Need and the route permit for the Sandpiper Pipeline. That's what they called it, the pipeline that was going to transport this Bakken crude out of North Dakota through Minnesota. And what Enbridge did instead is they went and they bought 30% into the DAPL, Dakota Access Pipeline. So Enbridge also owns 30% of that, and they're transporting Bakken crude through DAPL instead of this new corridor that they wanted to open up earlier before the current Line 3.
And Joe, one of my thoughts to it, and we've heard this in other issues with different tribes and different development, the case of ancestral land versus, you know, borders, you know, reservation borders. Is this in play in any of this of, although it may not be legally the reservation on maps and on paper, but it's ancestral land as well? Is any of that going on with any of this?
Yes. We're treaty tribes. You know, the Red Lake Band, you know, had a treaty with the United States in 1863. The Leech Lake and White Earth Bands were part of the Mississippi Chippewa, and their territory was settled in the 1855 treaty with the Chippewa. And in both of those treaties, in each of them, there was no surrender of the off-reservation gathering rights. And in the Red Lake Treaty, Red Lake ceded 11 million acres, which went over into North Dakota. But the treaty journal that accompanied the treaty negotiations included six separate assurances by Alexander Ramsey, the territorial governor, who was the lead treaty negotiator, that those rights to gather and hunt on the land ceded would continue after the land cession. It's pretty hard to argue that those rights don't exist.
Well, you know what? We are out of time, and I really appreciate everybody who has caught us up to speed where things currently stand. We know things are not over. We know people have concerns. We know development continues. If there's anything more you'd like to share, you want to give us an update of what you've witnessed in your own area, go ahead and give us a ring, 1-800-99-NATIVE, or actually you got to email it. And you can also tweet it to us at 1-800-99-NATIVE. You can find us comments at nativeamericacalling.com. And that's going to do it for our program today. Thank you to everybody that we heard from in the hour, including Paul Eberth, Nick Kedrowski, as well as Joe Plummer and Frank Bebo. Tomorrow we are joining, we're going to jump into a discussion about how people are living with disabilities during this pandemic. I'm Tara Gatewood. We'll meet you here tomorrow.
Did you know COVID financial relief in the form of forgivable PPP loans is available to small business owners and independent contractors, including artists? DreamSpring has worked with New Mexicans looking to open or expand their business for over 25 years, and now they're helping provide PPP loans. Information, including how to qualify, at dreamspring.org. That's dreamspring.org. DreamSpring supports this program.
Hami takipiki. Le omakat khechak nichante tkhiki khilayo. Nichante isam zania wash agya yota nila yelo. La kol zania otel yayo isam wasoli at shihantas. Lil yayo. Healthcare.gov. Nish lel mas apkhayo. 1-800-318-2596. Le wot khaniki. Medicare na Medicaid otietna hiyapelo. Ho, hetsetewelo.
Native America Calling is produced in the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico, by Kwanic Broadcast Corporation, a Native nonprofit media organization. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, with support from the Public Radio Satellite Service. Music is by Brent Michael Davis. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.